And now, Saturday Night Theatre. The Case of the Late Pig by Marjorie Allingham, dramatised for radio by Gregory Evans, with James Snell as Albert Campion and Cyril Sharps as Lug. The Case of the Late Pig.
The main thing to remember in autobiography, I've always thought, is not to let any damn modesty creep in to spoil the story. This adventure is mine, Albert Campion's, and I think I was pretty near brilliant in it. Though I must admit, I nearly got myself and old Lug killed, and even now I hear a harp quintet whenever I consider it. It begins with me eating in bed. Lug, I ought to explain, is my, gentleman. He's an old war stallion, and he came straight from serving time at His Majesty's pleasure to serving me at mine. Some time ago, Lug acquired the habit of reading the Times to me while I eat, whether I like it or not. His taste doesn't run towards the literary and journalism, so he only reads the columns that appeal to him. He reads the deaths.
How about this one, then? Peters.
I was reading a letter. It interested me particularly because it was both flowery and unsigned. Lug laid down the paper with gentle exasperation.
Know anyone called Peterscock?
Hmm?
Oh, God. Peters, R.I., aged 37, on Thursday the 9th at Teverin, after a short illness. Funeral, Teverin Church.
Peters? Did you say R.I. Peters?
Why? Know him?
Well, not now.
Oh?
We were at school together. Sweet little angels at St. Botolph's Abbey. Pig Peters took 3 inches of skin off my chest with a rusty penknife to show I was his branded slave. He made me weep till I was sick, and I kicked him in the belly. Then he held me over an unlighted gas jet until I passed out.
Blimey.
I haven't seen Peters since I went into the sicker with carbon monoxide poisoning. I promised him then I'd go to his funeral.
Oh, get your black suit. I like a nice funeral when it's someone you know.
Have a look at this. What do you make of it?
Why should he die? He was so young. This what come this morning?
Yeah.
There are thousands more fitting than he for the journey. Peters, Peters, saith the angel. Why? He was so strong, so unprepared. The roots are red in the earth.
And the century creepeth on its way. Why should the mole move backwards? It is not yet 11. Well?
Bit out the prayer book.
Don't be an idiot.
I remember learning it when I was a nipper.
What's the machine, then?
Royal, portable, new. No peculiarities. Nothing special about the paper sold everywhere. Let's see the envelope. Oh, WC1, the old central stamp. Ah, chuck it in the fire.
I don't know. Peters, you see, this and the announcement...
Don't be daft. Sling it in the fire.
Lug got up and waddled out with the tray. R.I. Peters. It was Pig, all right. I remember him booting me to persuade me to call him Rip. He was the major evil in my life, along with the devil, injustice, and Latin prose. When he fed my collection of leaf skeletons to the junior study fire, I wished he was dead. Remembering the incident 20 years later, I was mildly surprised to find that I still did.
I just did a look at the map. Know where Teverin is?
Should I?
Couple of miles west of Keepsake. We can pop into High Waters and see Sir Leo. Oh,
I don't know.
And Miss Janet.
I suppose that's what decided me. Sir Leo Persuivant is chief constable of the county and a lovely old boy. He's got a daughter, Janet. I still like her, in spite of everything. Tethering. It was hardly en fête, a ploughed hill with a huddle of cottages on it. The churchyard in late winter was a sodden mass of dead cow parsley, overgrown and pathetic. Peters had been an ordinary, unlovable sort of twerp, and he was being buried in an ordinary, unloved sort of way. I began to wish I hadn't bothered coming. But then, as we were standing by the graveside in the light rain...
To take to himself the soul of our dear brother here departed. We therefore commit his body to the ground. Earth to earth, ashes to ashes.
Good Lord,
dust
watch it!
To dust.
Pig, you almost have me in with him. What's the matter?
Of the resurrection to eternal life.
I'd know it anywhere.
What are you twittering about?
Pig had several revolting habits, even at 12 and a half. One of them was a particularly vicious way of clearing his throat. I've just heard it for the first time in 20 years.
Amen.
Four others had come to see Pig laid to rest. A pleasant, stolid-looking chap, a girl in rather flashy black, a rather nasty old man, and...
Whippet, what are you doing here?
Well, you see,
He didn't answer, and without thinking, I raised my hand to clip him. He never did answer unless he was clipped, and force of habit was too much for me. Gilbert Whippet had been my junior at St. Botolph's. I hadn't seen him for 15 years, but he still looked the same. It's about as easy to describe Whippet as water or a sound in the night. I can't really say what he looks like, though presumably he's got a face, since it would be an omission I'd be sure to observe. Somehow, he made me unreasonably angry.
Whippet! What are you doing at Pig's funeral?
I was invited, I think. Yes, look, I had this. Came this morning. Why should he die? He was so young. There are thousands more fitting than he for the journey. Goes on in the same vein. Here. Odd. About the mole, I mean. Informal invitation, I suppose. I came.
He drifted away as though there were nothing to keep him in place. He left the letter in my hand. It was identical to the one that I had received that same morning. As I came out of the churchyard, I noticed the stolid, pleasant-looking chap glance at me inquiringly. I went over to him, wondering how to put the question that was in my mind. He helped me out.
Sad business. Quite young. Did you know him?
I don't know. I mean, I was at school with an R.I. Peters, and when I saw the Times this morning, I thought... When I got here, I felt it must be some other Peters.
Big man, too fat. Sandy hair and light lashes. Went to school at Cheapskate.
Yes, that was the man I knew.
Sad business. He came to me after an appendectomy. Shouldn't have had it, really. Weak heart. Picked up a touch of pneumonia on the way down. Well,
I see.
Couldn't save him, poor chap. I'm in practice here. Run the nursing home over the hill. Take in a few convalescents. Never had a death here.
We stood there chatting aimlessly for a while, and then I went back to town. I didn't call into High Waters to see Leo and Janet. I wasn't in the mood. Pig's funeral had rattled me somehow, left a sort of half-heard echo in my ears. Later, I looked out some old school photographs and had a good look at him. You could see even then what he was going to turn into. But it was nothing to get excited about. He was dead. I shouldn't see him again. Well, all that was in January. By June, I'd forgotten the fellow. And then Janet Persuivant rang up. I'd never heard her hysterical before. She was twittering into the phone like a nest of sparrows.
It's horrible. Leo wants you to come at once. I can't say it over the phone, but Leo says it's... listen, Albert. M for mother, U for unicorn, R for rabbit, D for darling, R for Arthur... E for...
What?
Oh, Albert. Murder.
Hang on. I'll be there. Leo was standing on the steps of High Waters when Lug and I drove up. He came down to the car and grasped my hand.
Janet told you.
Yes.
Not a word. Move over. The mortuary is behind the police station. I'll direct you.
Now, my boy, I want your opinion. We're going to trust you. I haven't put a thought in your mind. I haven't influenced you in any way, right?
No, sir.
Good. In here. There, under the sheet. Take a look.
I said nothing. Lying on the table was the body of Pig Peters. He was unmistakable, and I knew without touching his limp, podgy hand that he hadn't been dead for 12 hours. Yet in January, and this was June.
Dead.
What?
Damnable cad, though. Or not to say it, perhaps, but...
You knew him?
I met him. Had a most unpleasant interview with him only last night. Rather awkward in the circumstances.
What was he calling himself?
Ah, alias, eh? Very likely. It never occurred to me. Harris, Oswald Harris. More money than was good for him. And the manners of an enemy NCO. Terrible fella. See the wound.
It's hard not to. It looks as if he's been kicked through a felt hat by a cart horse.
Yeah, very good. Damn nearly right. Substitute urn for cart horse and you're bang on the button.
Urn?
Geranium urn. Stone. Big so-called ornamental thing. Madness to keep him on the parapet, always said so.
So, a stone urn fell off a parapet.
Oh, very good, very good. Except the fell part.
What?
No way round it. The urn was one of several, all firm as the Rock of Gibraltar. Must have been pushed.
I see.
Damned awkward. Still, I thought you'd agree with me. Seen all you want?
I glanced down at the corpse. Pig, certainly. Dead again 5 months after the funeral. There was enough mystery in the business already. I kept my contribution to myself. I let the sheet fall back. I couldn't believe that Leo had dragged me down here just to confirm his suspicion that Pig had died from a bang on the head. There was more to come.
I'd like to have a talk with you. Private matters. We'll go down to Holt Knight's, see poor Poppy, have a look at one or two things.
Holt Knight's? Is that where it happened?
Come on. Getting chilly in here.
As we walked to the Lagonda, I considered the business. Holt Knight's. You see, if Keepsake is a sort of county Eden, which I suppose it is, Holt Knight's, well, that's the Rose Garden. Keepsake's as perfect a village as you can imagine. Norman church, village green, two splendid pubs. On one side it's got an estuary, on the other a ring of modest estates. Holt Knight's is the largest. It was run down for a long time, just a millstone round someone's noble neck. Then Poppy Bellew retired from the stage and bought it, and, well, she turned it into the finest hotel and country pub in the kingdom, with an 18-hole golf course attached, all very lazy and homely and comfortable. And now... But we'd reached the cars by then. Leo was looking at Lug with mistrust. I stepped in.
Lug, I'm going to drive Sir Leo over to Holt Knight's. You'd better go back to High Waters. Take a bus or something.
A bus? A bus?
Yes, one of those big green things. You must have seen them about.
Extraordinary fellow, your man. Saved your life in the war, did he?
Good Lord, no. Why?
Well, just crossed my mind. Serious business, this, you know.
Yeah?
More than half a dozen good fellows, including myself, were in a good mind to put that Harris chap out of the way last night.
What?
Well, one of us must have lost his head.
I'd better stop the car.
You see, Harris was going to buy Holt Knight's.
Buy the Knight's? How on earth?
Well, Poppy was a bit in debt, apparently. She'd accepted a mortgage from some fella in London. Nice chap, good terms. Seems he was an agent for Harris.
I see.
Harris came to the hotel and started bragging, throwing his weight about. Said he was going to rip up the golf course, close the hotel, build a dog track, a dance hall, a fun fair, buy up some of the other estates, perhaps. He would have killed the village.
Yes.
Killed it. We tried to buy the mortgage back, me and some of the other fellas. He wouldn't have it. He was such a bore.
And then this morning...
He was sleeping in a deck chair and an urn fell on his head. Damned awkward, Campion.
Holt Knight's on a June evening. Breathtaking. The lawn rises to the Georgian facade of crushed strawberry brick and the high chestnuts mass behind. As we pulled up, the place seemed deserted. I decided to have a look at the spot straight away. Leo led me round to the terrace where the deck chairs, flimsy and oddly Japanese-looking in their bright colours, straggled along under the windows.
There, under that sack. Just fell off the parapet and...
Good Lord! This must weigh the best part of 100 weight.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it didn't smash him to pulp.
Oh, glancing blow, my boy. There's the chair over there.
Good Lord.
Yeah, heap of firewood, huh? He was out here by himself, you know, snoozing. We were playing cards in the lounge. None of us would speak to him. Childish, if you like, but there you are. Fellow was an unmitigated tick.
clouds are blowing up.
What?
Leo!
Oh, there's Poppy. Let's go in.
Albert, good to see you. Leo, you're a lamb to send for him. Come and have a drink. Isn't it awful? Such a horrid man, Harry. Has Leo told you how he tried to think?
It's not easy to describe Poppy. Over 50, I suppose. Tight grey curls, wide mouth, enormous blue eyes. That's the easy part. The rest? Well, she's friendly, generous, with a sort of naive obstinacy. She dresses with enough frills to rig a frigate. It suits her nature, if not her figure. You see her and you like her. That's all there is to it.
But it was very wrong of someone. I'm not being silly, am I, Albert? I did tell them it was dangerous. I said it would lead to trouble.
What?
Last night when... Haven't you told him?
Well, I...
But you must. It's not fair.
I was coming to it. I've only had him down here half an hour.
It was like this. Two or three of the more hearty old pets hatched a plot. They were going to get Harris drunk and get him to sign a document relinquishing the option, right?
Well, yes.
I told them it was dishonest. I said it wouldn't work and, well, it didn't.
Harris just got truculent and passed out. We had to put him to bed.
He went to sleep it off on the terrace next morning and... that beastly thing fell on him.
Awkward, you see. Damned awkward.
Leo's Inspector Percy.
Pusey.
Such a nice man. He's been through the servants with a tooth comb. Hasn't found a thing. Not even a brain, poor ducks.
So, he looks like one of the guests.
And I only have such dear people.
There's going to be a hellish scandal.
I think I'd better see that parapet.
Be careful, my boy. The slates aren't all they should be.
Well, any theory I might have had about a feather-brained cat is out of the question.
I know.
Someone must have lifted the thing up before they pushed it out. The parapet's wet here, just underneath where the urn would have stood.
Yes, I noticed that.
Do you know why it is?
No idea. No water anywhere else on the parapet.
No. But it must have been under the urn.
Look there, mincing down the drive. Horrible little man.
Yes. Do you know him?
No. Poppy seems to, though. He's been hanging around here recently. You must have a word with her about that. Let's go down.
I glanced out of the window and saw the little figure at the bottom of the drive. I recognized him immediately, principally because of the extraordinary sensation of dislike he aroused in me. The last time I'd seen him was 5 months ago, weeping ostentatiously into an enormous black handkerchief at Pig's first funeral. As I steered the Lagonda back towards high waters through the yellow evening light, I did a bit of constructive thinking. I'm not one of those intellectual sleuths with a mind like an adding machine. I'm more like a bloke with a sack and a spiked stick. I collect all the odds and ends and turn out the bag in the lunch hour. Well, it seemed to me then that the bag was pretty well full, and I had a fair idea what was going to come tumbling out. One of Poppy's guests had clearly got overprotective. A sad business, I felt, but thankfully almost over. I had no idea then what was still in store. As we drove down the narrow village street, I thought of Pig and his two funerals, past and present. I asked Leo a question, as casually as I could.
Tethering? Yes, of course I know it. Just across the fields.
Isn't there a nursing home there?
Yes, run by Brian Kingston. Good fella. Very small, though, very small.
Is he?
No, the nursing home, not Kingston. Big fella, you'll like him.
Yeah?
Dear chap. Coming to dinner tonight, just the four of us.
You know him well, then?
Fairly well. I was playing a hand with him when this confounded urn fell and made all this trouble.
Bridge?
Before lunch? Good grief, no. Poker. We were just settling up when a shadow fell past the window and there was a sort of thud. It wasn't an ordinary thud and... oh, damned unpleasant. Didn't like the look of him, did you? Dangerous. Thought a fellow you'd set the dogs on instinctively.
Who?
That chap we saw skulking around in the nights. Told Poppy about it, but she just brushed it off.
I think I've seen him before.
Where? Where was that?
Oh, at a funeral somewhere.
Very likely.
As we rolled up the drive to High Waters, Janet came down the steps to meet us. She fussed about Leo lovingly before she bundled him off to change for dinner. Her attitude to me, however, was rather different.
Oh, by the way, your friend called at about 6:30, but didn't stay. I said you'd be in for dinner.
Lug, oh, so that's it. What's he done now?
Oh, not Lug. I like Lug. Your girlfriend.
Girlfriend? Did she leave a name?
Yes, she did. Miss Effie Rowlandson.
Never heard of her. Was she a nice girl?
No. No, she was not.
So I went into High Waters alone. Old Pepper, pottering around in the hall doing the odd jobs that butlers do, seemed pleased to see me.
Mr. Campion, how nice to have you back at High Waters, sir.
Thank you, Pepper.
The letter came for you this morning, sir. It's on the chest.
Oh, thanks.
You're in your usual room, sir. I'll bring up your bags.
Good Lord.
I beg pardon, sir.
Nothing, Pepper.
Oh, saith the owl, oho, sobbeth the frog, oh, mourneth the worm, where is Peters that was promised us? The angel weepeth behind golden bars, his wings cover his face.
His wings cover his face? Why should these things be? Who was he to disturb the heavens? Consider, oh, consider the lowly mole, his hands are sore, and his snout bleedeth.
Same envelope and paper as the first. A pleasure to read.
Poor little mole.
Analysis, Larg, that's what I want, not sentiment. Help me with this tie.
Right.
I've got 4 minutes to get down to the dining room.
An owl, a frog, a worm and an angel are all upset because they can't find this here Peters. Keep still.
Oh.
Well, that's clear, isn't it? And it was Peters that was under that sheet this morning.
The same.
Queer. What'd he die of?
Flower pot on the head with intent. Where are my cufflinks?
That's rubbish, that note. I told you, chuck it in the fire.
The point you seem to have missed is that Peters died this morning.
Well?
The note was posted last night.
So, the bloke what posted it...
knew that Peters was going to die today.
Yeah, well, maybe I was wrong.
The little mole's a prophet. The puff pastry has a sausage in it after all.
Botulistic, most likely.
I arrived at the dining room with half a second to spare, and Pepper regarded me with affection, which was more than Janet did, I was sorry to say. I sat down and found myself next to the pleasant-looking chap with whom I had chatted at Pig's tethering funeral. About
6 months ago. Oh, Brian Kingston. I think we met before.
At a funeral near tethering, yes.
Yeah. That chap we saw at Holt Lights, you know, Campion.
Yes.
Kingston says he's staying in the village.
At Mrs. Swift's. Mm. Apparently, this Mr. Hayhoe...
What's his name?
Hayhoe. Well, apparently...
Hayhoe? Hayhoe? Idiotic name. Must be false.
I don't think so. Hayhoe is quite a common name.
Hayhoe? I don't believe it. Look, this is hardly the time to be funny, Kingston. I mean, this is a serious business, my dear fellow. It's very serious. I mean, I'm serious, wasn't I?
Wasn't Hayhoe that serious queer fella at the funeral?
Peter's funeral? Yes. Yes, I think he was. There was an odd sort of girl there, I remember that. Wait a minute.
What?
I just thought of something. Perhaps we can have a chat after dinner. Did you know Peters well?
Not intimately.
He wasn't a nice chap. I think I'm onto something. Can't tell you here.
But we didn't get a chance to talk after dinner. The inspector in charge of the case came to see Leo, and he excused himself, taking me with him. We adjourned to the gunroom.
Well then, Pusey, what have you come up with?
I don't know what to make of it, sir. It seems like we've made a mistake. But where it is, I can't tell you. I spent the whole day questioning people and, well...
And no one but Sir Leo has a decent alibi.
No, sir. Everyone has an alibi. And a good one, too. They all knew each other well. One of them couldn't have done it unless...
Well, unless what? Well, go on, man. We're in lodge here.
Unless all the gentlemen knew, sir. Unless you... They... Unless they were all in it together.
Conspiracy, eh? Is that what you think?
Well, sir, it hardly seems...
I don't know. I don't know, Pusey. It's an idea. But it couldn't have been so in this case. They would have all had to be in it. Don't you see? And I was there.
Yes. Of course, sir. I was forgetting that.
Oh, no. Impossible. We'll have to think of something else, Pusey. No, we'll go over the alibis together. I mean, there may be a loophole.
They settled down to work, and not wishing to trespass on the inspector's province, I drifted off to find Kingston. I finally tracked him down on the terrace. He was standing alone in the moonlight, smoking a cigar, and looking rather like a Hollywood leading man. He took my arm eagerly.
That chap
Peters.
Yes.
Well, this is rather in the nature of a confession.
Oh, yeah.
No, I didn't rob him or anything. I took down his will. I wrote it out and he signed it.
I don't quite see what...
Look, I know I can trust you. I have heard about you from Janet. You see, I altered it a bit.
Did you now?
Oh, not in substance, of course, in form. As he dictated it, it ran something like this. To that unspeakable bounder and unjailed crook, my brother, born Henry Richard Peters, whatever he may be calling himself now, I leave all that I possess. I do not do this because I like him. Well, it went on in the same vein. I didn't think it was decent. A thing like that can cause a lot of trouble. I cleaned up the wording a bit.
Very sensible. But I don't quite see where this is leading.
You see, as soon as I saw Harris, he reminded me of someone. Tonight at dinner, when you mentioned the funeral, I remembered who it was.
Peters?
Yes. The more I think about it, the stronger the likeness becomes. Well, you see what I'm driving at?
I think so. You think Peters and Harris are...
Brothers.
Oh.
Now I've said it, it doesn't sound so exciting, does it? Anyway, I thought there might
be... There you are. I've been trying to find you. There's a call for you, Dr. Kingston. A Mrs. Bedford.
Oh, yes. I've been expecting this. She's a week overdue. I'd better go. Would you say goodnight to your father for me?
Of course. Good night.
Good night.
I'll let myself out. Thank you for a splendid evening.
Quite romantic, isn't it? Out here in the moonlight. Night-scented stocks in the garden. Nightingales in the ilex.
Albert?
Yes?
Do you know who did this beastly murder?
No, not yet.
You think you'll find out?
Yes, I'll find out.
Albert, will you hold my hand? It'll be a dreadful shock to Leo when he has to know.
Poppy?
Well, they'd all shield her, wouldn't they? After all, she has the most to lose. Go back to town, Albert. Give it up now. Don't find out.
You look very lovely tonight. Your hair, your dress, it... Oh.
I'm sorry about this afternoon. I'm sorry about what I said. That woman, I know...
Oh, Mr. Campion. Oh, I beg your pardon. Forgive me, Miss Janet.
What is it, Pepper?
A young lady has called to see you, sir. I put her in the breakfast room. Miss Effie Rowlandson, sir.
Miss Effie Rowlandson. I'm afraid I looked at her blankly. She was petite, blonde, and girlish, with starry eyes and the teeth of a toothpaste advertisement. Her costume was entirely black, save for a long white quill in her hat, and the general effect lay somewhere between Hamlet and Aladdin.
Oh, you don't remember me. Oh, I was sure you would. Oh, how awful of me to come.
Perhaps you got the wrong man.
Oh, no. I remember you. At the funeral.
Oh, yes. Rowley Peters' funeral over at Tethering.
That's right.
I do remember now.
I knew you would. I just knew it. I like that sometimes. I just know things. I knew you'd help me. He trampled on me.
I beg your pardon?
I don't know when I've been so mistaken in a man. He was hard, I knew that. All men are hard, aren't they? Not like him. Oh, but I ought not to talk about him like that, did I, when he's dead? If he is dead. Is he?
Who?
Oh, you're cautious. Rowley Peters, of course. I used to call him Rowley Poley. Didn't I have to make him cross? Well, it's wrong to laugh when he's dead. If he is dead. Do you know...
My dear girl, we went to his funeral, didn't we?
Look, I've come to consult you, Mr. Campion. I'm putting all my cards on the table. I want to know if you're satisfied with that funeral.
It wasn't much to do with me.
Oh, wasn't it? Well, why was you there, hmm? I want a straight answer. There was something funny about that funeral, and you know it.
I'm perfectly willing to help you. Suppose you tell me why you think I can.
Well... I'll trust you. I was engaged to marry Rowley Peters, Mr. Campion, and then he went and died in a hole and corner nursing home and left all his money to his brother. And if you don't think that suspicious, I do.
Because he left it all to his brother?
Well, it's funny he died at all, if you ask me. I think he's done the dirty on me. If he's hiding, I'll find him if it's the last thing I do. I came to you because you're a detective and... I like your face.
Splendid. But why come here? Why come to Keepsake, of all places?
Oh, I've got a friend in the village, and he's seen my photographs of Rowley. A few days ago, he wrote to me, this friend. There's a gentleman in the village very like a friend of yours, he wrote. Come and take a look. Well, when I got here, I found the man I'd come to see had got himself killed this morning. So I came to you.
And you want to identify him?
Yes.
Why me? Why not go to the authorities?
Well, you see, I felt I knew you.
It was a strange night with a great moon sailing in an infinite sky. Lug, peeved at being fetched out at such an hour, drove us through Keepsake, its streets empty and mysterious in the false light. Miss Effie Rowlandson shivered in the back seat with a blanket round her knees. I began to feel that she was going to be a great responsibility.
Well, here we are, Miss Rowlandson. Are you sure you wouldn't prefer to save this till morning?
No, thank you. I made up my mind to go through with it tonight. I've got to know.
Come on. We'll see if Inspector Pewes is still up.
Come along, miss. No need to be scared. I tell you, sir, we could do with a bit of help. We tried the landlord of his flat in London.
No good.
No, nothing. It's through here, miss, if you don't mind.
All right.
Fine. Just a bit cold.
And there's a light switch just inside the door. Now, there's nothing to be afraid of. I'll go first. Don't worry, miss. He's the only one in here. He's on a table and there's a sheet over him. So when you want me to draw it back, just you... Now. Oh, my God!
He's gone! He's gone! What's happened to him? You told me he'd be here. I was going to look at him. Now he's gone!
Perhaps it would be best if the young lady went home.
I'm not going back to the Feathers by myself. I won't. I won't.
I'll drive you down.
The situation had all the unreality and acute discomfort of a nightmare. The fields and walls and hedges on either side of the road were ghostly in the false light. It was hot and there wasn't a breath of wind anywhere. Effie, beside me in the Lagonda, was shivering so much I thought she might pass out.
I've had a shock. I steeled myself when it wasn't necessary. That was one thing. Then I realised Rowley got out by himself. That sheet, it was just thrown back like someone had got out of bed. You didn't know Rowley Peters like I did, Mr. Campion. He was clever. He was clever and cruel. And he's about somewhere. He's hiding.
He was dead this afternoon. Since miracles don't happen much nowadays, he's probably dead still.
I'm not an imaginative girl, Mr. Campion. But you read of funny things, don't you? Suppose he was to rise up behind one of those banks by the side of the road and come out towards
Shut
us.
Shut up! There's some perfectly reasonable explanation. When you get back, have a stiff drink and go to bed. You'll find it's all been cleared up by the morning.
Oh, you're hard. I like hard men. I do, really.
Well, we're here. Stay by the car. Which door is it?
It's the one marked club room. Expect it'll be locked.
The one round here?
Yes, it's that one.
I say, you're fearfully late. Do you know what the time...
Good God! Whip it!
Oh, Campion. Hello. Terribly late, isn't it? I'm just off.
Hey, whip it. Where are you going?
Well, bed. Where else? It is past midnight, you know.
What are you doing here?
Well, I heard you knock, so I...
Not here at the door. In Keepsake.
Oh. Well, I'm staying here for a day or two.
Mr. Whippet, it's gone. It's disappeared. What should we do?
Ah, Miss Rowlandson... It's very late.
It's gone. Rowley Peters' body.
Oh, awkward. Holds things up so.
Hmm.
Well, glad to have seen you, Campion. I'll look you up sometime. You'd better go in, Miss Rowlandson. It's terribly late.
Good night, Mr. Campion.
Good night.
Yes, good night. Oh! Your foot. You seem to have left it in the door. I can't...
Look here. If you know anything about this business, you'd better tell me. What do you know about Peters?
Nothing. I'm just staying here. Oh, I've heard the talk, of course. Close the door.
Wait! You had one of those letters. Have you had any more?
About the mole? Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I have. I've got it somewhere. I say it's terribly awkward, you losing the body. Have you looked in the river?
The river? Do you know anything?
Do you mind, Campion? You're creasing my dressing gown. Well, it's the obvious place, isn't it? Now. Oh. Look, it's fearfully late. Way past my bedtime. I'll look you up tomorrow, if I may. I don't mean to be rude, but... What's that?
Well...
Good night, Campion. See you tomorrow. Good luck with the body.
As I drove back to the police station, I tried to reconcile Whippet's appearance with the whole mysterious business. And why the river? Why should he think the body would turn up there? I covered the half mile in a little under a minute and pulled up outside at the same moment that another car arrived from the opposite direction. As I climbed out, I recognized Leo's respectable Humber.
Hey, there's you, Campion. Most extraordinary business. Pusey told me over the phone. I don't like monkey business with a corpse. Not a bit like my district. Indecent. Ah, Pusey, anything to report?
Come round and look, sir.
Yeah.
All these windows were bolted on the inside.
Yeah.
I checked round at about 11 o'clock. Well, the body was here then. I was thinking about bed when Mr. Campion arrived with the young lady and Mr. Lugg. Oh, he's inside, sir, drinking tea.
Yes, he would be.
Well, that's when we made the discovery, sir.
Well, did the key leave your possession?
No, sir.
Pusey, I've always found you an efficient officer,
yes.
But you're asking me to believe a fairy
no,
story.
No, sir, you see...
If the body didn't go through the windows, it must have gone through the door. And if you had the only...
Excuse me, sir, but Mr. Lugg and me, we made a discovery. You see, all the buildings in this yard were put up by a local builder. And, well, they've all got the same lock.
I see. Any keys missing?
Well, no. But, well, we've had the builder in doing a bit of work recently. There's been a lot of to-ing and fro-ing.
Damned inefficient.
Yes, well, there's something else we found. Look, over here. Huh? Now, this fence was perfect this afternoon. These boards have been kicked out tonight.
So this was where he was brought through,
Looks so, sir.
Have you looked in the lane behind?
Yeah, me and Mr. Lugg had a good look round, sir. There's nothing. The ground's too hard for there to be any marks. He was a heavy fella. Seems very likely it was done with a car. Or a cart. Yeah, excuse me, sir. I think the best thing is if we wait till morning and question all those as live nearby.
In the end, we left it at that. Leo drove back to Highwaters and Lug followed in the Lagonda. Pusey went to bed and I walked off down the lane at the back of the shed with the moon already sinking and faint streaks of light in the east. It was colder, and I was in the mood to walk home. The lane went on for some distance between high hedges, and I sauntered on, my mind on the business. After a while, I passed through into a field that rose up to form a considerable hill, black against the sky. It was very dark at the bottom of the hill, and as I plodded on, lost in thought, there came down to me suddenly a sound at once so human and so terrifying I felt the hair on my scalp rise.
Pig!
For a moment I stood still, prey to all the irrational fears of childhood. Then I set off up the hill at the double. Suddenly, as I reached the brow, I saw something silhouetted against the grey sky. A tripod with something on it that I at first took to be a machine gun. It was a telescope.
A very good day to you.
Yes. Good day.
Perhaps I have the advantage of you, sir. You are Mr. Campion.
And you're Mr. Hayhoe.
It'll do, it'll do.
We met at a funeral.
This is a most unexpected pleasure. I was hoping for an interview. I didn't expect to find you wandering about in the dawn. Most young men nowadays prefer to spend the best part of the day in bed.
You're up early yourself, waiting to see the dawn?
That and other things. I take it you are investigating the death of that unfortunate fellow, Harris.
Do you?
Well, you needn't be coy, Mr. Campion. I can be very useful to you.
Oh, yes?
Yes, for a reasonable sum, I will undertake to give you certain information. Information that it would take you a long time to collect alone, and which should lead you to a very successful conclusion of the case. Your professional reputation will be enhanced, and I shall, of course, take none of the kudos. Now, the terms...
Harris was a relation of yours, I suppose.
My nephew. Not a very dutiful one. He was quite wealthy, you see, and, well, not very generous.
Nephew. Well, that explains the mystery of the cough.
What?
And Peters. The gentleman whose funeral you attended, was he a nephew?
I have several nephews, Mr. Campion. Look, I hate to press the point, but shall we say 500 guineas for a complete and private explanation of the whole affair? Or, of course, we might split it up into lots, as it were.
If you do know anything, it's your duty to go to the police.
Dear me, is this your last word?
I'm afraid so.
Well, I gave you the chance. You can't deny that.
Well, if that's all...
My dear young man, don't be hasty. I can help you. Why should we quarrel?
If you knew anything of importance, you'd hardly dare talk about it.
Look, you don't understand. My position is simple. Safe and simple. I have an asset that I intend to realize. There are two likely purchasers. You and another party. I shall simply dispose of the goods to the highest bidder.
Fine. Well, I'll offer half a crown. Let me know if I'm outbid.
Wait, wait. You've a lot to lose, Mr. Campion. Suppose we meet here tomorrow morning, 7 o'clock. If I can't get satisfaction in other quarters, well, I may bait my price a little. What do you say?
Perhaps.
Here then, 7? Good morning, Mr. Campion.
And I went off down the hill. At the time, I thought I was quite justified in letting him stew for 24 hours. At the time, I didn't know the kind of person I was up against. Whenever I'm apt to get over-pleased with myself, I remember that little chat on the early morning hillside. As I came wearily up the drive at high waters, it was full dawn. The air was magnificent, the sky a translucent blue, and the birds were roaring at one another in undisturbed abandon. I had a tepid bath and slept for a couple of hours, but I was waiting for Leo when he appeared around 8. We went for a stroll round the garden before breakfast, and I put my request to him.
Had a fellow watch?
Yes.
Good idea. A ring Pusey. Extraordinary name, hey-ho. Any reason above general suspicion?
He tried to sell me information. Oh. In fact, he tried to sell me the solution to the whole business.
What? Bring him in, bring him in. I mean, this is no time for pussyfooting, my boy. We want to get him down to the station and tell him where he stands.
I don't think I would, sir. Leave him loose and see what he leads us to.
Well, I don't know, but well, as you like. Prefer the more straightforward methods myself. Oh, well, let's go in. I'll get on to Pusey.
As it happened, of course, he was perfectly right, but none of us knew that then. I breakfasted alone, and Janet drifted in, tossed me a glance of faint contempt, and drifted out without speaking, two bright spots of colour burning on her cheeks. I decided, for want of anything better to do, to drive over to Halt Knight's to see Poppy. I found her in the lounge. It was early, and so we were alone. She seemed delighted to see me, and as usual, insisted on getting me a drink at once.
On the rocks, as the Americans say.
It's a bit early.
Oh, Albert, don't be a fuddy-duddy. Here, more rocks than scotch. How's that?
Thanks. Did you have any visitors yesterday morning? Someone who popped in and then left, perhaps?
Well, yes, I suppose I did. I'm afraid I haven't told Leo about it. It's rather awkward. People down here are terrible snobs.
I don't quite follow.
It was Hey-Ho. He's an awful little bounder, but he's got to live like anyone else.
Hey-Ho is a friend of yours?
Oh, no, not a friend. But he came to me for help yesterday morning.
He wanted to borrow money?
Oh, no. I mean, I might have lent him a pound or two, but you wouldn't say he borrowed money. You see, he came to me and told me the whole story. Harris was his nephew, apparently, and there'd been a lot of jiggery-pokery going on. This little tick Harris had done Hey-Ho out of all his money. Well, I mean, I knew what Harris was like, so I could quite believe him. I let him into Harris's room.
You what?
Oh, Harris was in there at the time. Hey-Ho wanted to see him privately. There was an awful row, and Harris sent him away with the flea in his ear. I never told Leo.
And that was on the morning that Harris was killed?
Well, yes, of course. Yesterday.
Well, how do you know Hey-Ho wasn't here when the urn toppled off so conveniently?
It wasn't convenient, Albert. My God, look at the mess. It certainly wasn't convenient.
Poppy.
He wasn't here. He left a long time before that. I know what goes on in my own house, I hope. I know it's the fashion around here to think I'm a dear, silly old fool, but I'm not completely demented. Here, let me freshen up your glass.
Thanks. And so why was Hayhoe here yesterday evening?
Well, it's difficult to explain. He came to offer me his help as a man of the world.
Thanks.
I think he really came to scrounge a drink.
I looked down at the glass in my hand and twirled the little blocks of ice round and round in the pale amber liquid. It was then that I had the whole case under my nose. Unfortunately, I only saw half of it. I hadn't had time to consider this for very long when I heard the sound of a car on the gravel outside, and thinking it might be Leo, Poppy and I strolled out to meet him. But it was Lug in the Lagonda, and as I hurried up, I saw that his great moon of a face betrayed unusual excitement.
Hop in. The General wants you down at the station. Got something for you.
They've found the body.
Oh, got your second side outfit working again, I see. Oh, morning, ma'am.
I'm sorry, Poppy. Leo's waiting for me down at the police station. I'll send him along when the excitement's over.
Do. He's a pet, Albert. One of the best. Tell him I'm silly and sorry, all right?
Where was it?
In the river.
The river?
Calm as you please. Bloke in a fishing boat picked it up.
But... dear me.
Funny place we come to. First they bang a chap on the head, then they sling him in a river. Some persons are never satisfied, really.
But why the river? It's bound to be found sooner or later.
It's an outrage. Disgraceful. In my own village, it shocked me, Campion. There was no point in it. I mean, it's wanton mischief.
Do you think so?
What do you mean?
I think there should be a post-mortem.
What?
Someone good, but someone discreet as well. Not Kingston, for heaven's sake. Anyone else locally do?
Well, yes. There's old Professor Farringdon. He did something of the sort for us some time ago. But you can see for yourself the cause of death. Are we justified in having a post-mortem?
It's always justified in the case of a violent death.
Yeah. When you saw the body yesterday, did you notice anything that put such an idea into your head?
No, I didn't. But this makes all the difference. Water has a peculiar property, doesn't it?
What do you mean?
It washes things. As I walked out of the police station, I was thinking of Whippet. Whippet and the anonymous letters. Whippet and Effie Rowlandson. Whippet and his extraordinary guess about the river, if it was a guess. I decided to look for Whippet. He wasn't at his hotel, and in the end I had to go back to High Waters unsatisfied. After lunch, I decided to take a turn about the garden to try to get a few things straight. It was one of those vivid summer days that are hot without being uncomfortable. As I walked down the grass path between the lavender hedges, I heard the sound of voices, and something familiar about one of them caught my attention. Two deck chairs were placed side by side on the rose lawn with their backs to me, and I heard Janet laugh. At the sound of my approach, her companion rose, neat and cool in his white flannels. I experienced an odd sensation, half relief and half exasperation.
Whippet!
Campion, found you at last. I've been searching for you all over the place, my dear fellow.
Oh, yes, where?
Oh, here and there, roundabout.
I've been busy. Hello, Janet.
Now, this is a nice friend of yours, Albert. Oh, do sit down.
There's a deck chair over there. Complicated things.
It's been found, you know, in the river.
Yes, I heard in the village.
You've got a lot to explain.
Yes, I know. Well, that's why I've been looking for you. There's Miss Rowlandson, for one thing. And, this. Came this morning. Have you had one?
Although the Skinner is at hand, his ease is in the earth. Peace and hope are in his warm heart. He foldeth his hand upon his belly. Faith is his that can remove the mountain or his little hill.
Same postmark as the rest. Funny, isn't it?
Do you make anything of it?
No.
He folded his hands upon his belly. Who's the he?
Well, I took it to be the mole. His little hill, you know.
Well, I suppose you both know what you're talking about.
I think I'd better go now. Now that I've found Campion and cleared all this up. You've been most kind to put up with me, Miss Persweven.
My pleasure, Mr. Whippet. Goodbye.
I'll walk with you to the gate. Look, Whippet, you'll have to explain. What are you doing in this business in the first place?
Who's that girl, Effie? She's got a strong personality, Campion. I met her at Pig's funeral, and she sort of, well, collected me. When she asked me to drive her down here yesterday, well...
What about the letters?
Well, you're not supposed to take them seriously, are you? Anonymous letters. Well, and yet, well, I wonder who's writing them. It's very disturbing, Campion. I'll be at the Feathers. Look me up when you can spare the time, and we'll go into it. Goodbye.
Albert? I don't want to interfere, Albert.
No.
Mr. Whippet told me a bit about Effie Rowlandson.
He did. Well, thank goodness for that.
I don't think you should let her annoy him.
What?
It's bad enough to bring her down here in the first place, without letting her get her claws into other people. I hate to have to talk to you like this, Albert, but really, you know, it is rather disgusting of you.
Before I could stop her, she turned on her heel and stalked back into the house. I followed her, of course, but she had shut herself in her bedroom, and once more I was given furiously to think. I went into the library, a large, old-fashioned room, cool and with the aromatic smell of paper. I sat down in a big leather armchair to think things out, but my lack of sleep was too much for me. I dozed off. I was awoken by...
sir?
What is it, Pepper?
Sir, the telephone, sir. Miss Poppy Bellew ringing from Halt Knight, sir. Perhaps you'd like to take it in here, sir?
Thank you, Pepper, yes. Poppy.
Oh, Albert. I've got an awful confession to make.
Oh, yes?
I'm afraid you're going to think I'm rather stupid. It seems Hey-Ho did come back that morning, the morning Harris was killed. One of the girls saw him. It was a long time after his row with Harris. I thought he'd gone. The girl knew I'd given him permission earlier, so she thought it... Oh, Albert... You have to tell Leo.
Arrest Hey-Ho? Why, I don't think we can arrest him, don't you know? Bring him in and question him. Wanted to do that all along, but we can't hold him.
But you must hold him. That's the point.
We're not a tittle of solid evidence.
Pull him in for something else.
Trump up a charge? Well, the fellow's a blackguard, I know, but monstrous.
At least keep him for 24 hours.
Well, what's on your mind, my boy? Sound apprehensive. Anything in the wind?
I don't know. Look... You think about the question of arrest. I'll go down to his lodgings with Pusey and pick him up. There's a constable on the place, isn't there?
It's all under control, sir. He's been in all day.
Good, good.
That's his room, where the light is. You can see him if you look.
Where?
Oh, there he is, Inspector. That shadow on the curtains. He hasn't moved for an hour.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry, Constable.
What, sir?
I'm afraid you're going to be dealing with dog licenses for quite a long time to come.
It was a coat and bolster over a chair, of course. Pusey stood looking at it when we got into the stuffy little attic bedroom, and he kept his temper remarkably well. From the constable's evidence, Hey-Ho could have had an hour's start at the most. Pusey mobilized his small force with speed and efficiency. He reported on his progress to Leo at the police station around about 11 o'clock.
He didn't leave by bus, and he hasn't got a car. If he went on foot by any of the main roads, he moves a deal faster than any ordinary animal. Can't understand it. Unless he took to the fields.
Seems to pin it, though, this bolting. Extraordinary thing. I took a dislike to the fellow the first time I saw him. Must have been hiding in Hall Knights all the time.
We'll get him, sir. The whole village is on the lookout, and none of us here will rest tonight. You go back to your bed, sir. You can leave him to us.
You've searched the hilltop.
Every inch. His telescope's up there, but nothing else. Besides, he couldn't get up there without being seen. Not unless he was a mole.
What?
Travel underground, you see, sir.
Leo drove me back to High Waters, and I climbed into bed for the first time in 48 hours. I was in dreamland, as the books say, the minute my little golden head touched the pillow. I only seemed to have been asleep for about a quarter of an hour when...
Mr. Albert! Mr. Albert! Ghost, troop, wake up! Mr. Albert!
What?
6 o'clock, you told me to wake you.
Oh, God.
Now, why are you bothered? Ayo's running away from a pack of rozzers all set to jag him for murder, but he's not going to pass up his little appointment with you. Oh, dear me, no.
Have you rung Inspector Pusey?
Yeah, not a sign. Searching all night, he said. Not a whisker.
Oh, dear.
I'll come with you if you like. Nothing like a long country walk before the dew's off the grass. Cools the feet.
I sent him back to bed, dressed, and went out. It was a fine, clear morning with a promise of great heat in the day to come. The sky was opal, the ground was soft, and it was a pleasant morning for walking. But I found my feet lagging, and I entered the hill meadow with the deepest foreboding. When I reached the summit, I felt relieved. I disturbed no more than a brace of larks, and the hilltop was bare but for Hey-Ho's old brass telescope mounted on its tripod. I wiped the dew from the lenses with my handkerchief. The view was stupendous. Halt Nights was rose-red and gracious in the grey saltings. The river mouth sparkled in the morning sun, and around it lay the pocket handkerchief fields. The corn high and green, the pasture browned a little in the hot weather. I stood there for a long time looking at the scene. So peaceful, so quiet, and so charming. There was nothing out of place, nothing frightening or remarkable. And then I saw it. About half a mile away, in the midst of a field waist-high in green corn, there was a dilapidated scarecrow. A grotesque, unnatural creature set up to terrify the not-quite-so-clever rooks. But the rooks were swarming upon it. Mr. Hey-Ho had been found.
Just one, you think, sir?
It looks that way. One thrust, strong and deep, over the collarbone and into the jugular.
Done here, do you think?
The road's just over there. The murderer wouldn't have had far to carry him.
It might have been done here. There's enough blood.
What was he doing in the middle of a field with a murderer, anyway?
A bit of private business. I'd like an opinion on the wound.
Well, Professor Farrington will be along later this morning to see the other body.
We can get Kingston to have a look in the meantime. Are we going to leave him up here?
Well, we should. At least until Farrington arrives. But we can't leave the fella hitched up out in the sun like this. It isn't decent.
Pusey and I took Hey-Ho's body off the piece of broken paling and laid it down among the green, whispering corn. The police then brought it on a tumbril to the little mortuary behind the station. Leo and I stood alone in the mortuary shed between the two white-covered things that had come to upset so violently the time-honored piece of keepsake.
This is what you were afraid of.
Something like this. He had definite information, you see. He talked about it.
But who's done it, Campion? Don't you see, my boy, a terrible thing is happening. It's the strangers who have been killed off. The field's narrowing down to our own people. Good God, what's to be done now?
Come. I've got Dr. Kingston outside, sir. Very anxious to help.
Oh, well, better have him in.
And I've sent a constable down to fetch Miss Rowlandson to have a look at... Well, the other gentleman. She'll be back any time.
Good.
Right. Well, if you'd like to go in, Dr. Kingston, it's this one here.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear me. Quite a mess, isn't it? Well, it looks like it was done with something narrow and sharp. A dagger. A trophy, perhaps. Something like the ones on the wall of the billiard room at Halt Nights. That kind of shape.
Now, there's nothing to worry about, Miss Rawlinson. No more nasty shocks.
Are you ready?
Yes. Yes. Yes, that's Riley Peters.
Are you sure?
Oh, yes. I wasn't in love with him. But I'm sorry he's dead.
Now, come on, miss. Let's go back to the station and have a cup of tea. We better get a statement down on paper.
Me out a lot. We got engaged, or nearly engaged. And then... Oh, Mr. Campion, you know the rest.
Yes.
Can I go now? I'd like to be by myself for a while.
Yes, of course, my dear.
Luck's outside. He'll drive you home.
And so it's really Peters we've got in there, isn't it?
I'm not sure anymore. I thought I recognised the corpse... I thought it was Peters, but now... You can't really identify a man after 25 years, and the two brothers were obviously alive.
Does it matter? They're both dead.
Whereas the murderer, on the other hand...
Is still roaming around somewhere.
Good morning, Inspector.
Ah, Professor Farrington.
You've got a remarkable amount of bodies here. I heard from Salio what you were suggesting. It's diabolical, a diabolical thing.
Then you think I'm right?
Not so fast. I wouldn't dare give an opinion without a careful autopsy.
No, of course.
But you may be right. I wouldn't be at all surprised. We'll know before long. Have this sent round to me. I'll let you know for certain in a day or two. But I think I dare express an opinion. A very tentative one, you understand. That he met his death sometime before he had that crack on his head.
Poison?
Chloral hydrate, most likely. The bang on the head was in the nature of a blind. You've got a clever man working against you, Mr. Campion. Now, let's have a look at the other poor fellow.
For 2 days, things hung fire, and Pusey and I collected what useful scraps of information we could. Janet developed a strained expression, Poppy took to her bed, and even Whippet was more solicitous than I'd supposed possible. I packed him off to talk to Janet, who was kind enough to put up with him. Kingston, of course, was very much in the foreground, and I even found him useful. He was an inveterate gossip with a cavalier regard for the laws of libel. Leo was perhaps the worst affected of us all. He sat in his gun room staring mournfully at his magnificent collection of sporting trophies. A mass of papers lay disregarded on his desk.
We've got 10 days. The inquest has been adjourned to give us a breathing space, but that means we've got to get results. Every morning I wake up wondering what the day's going to bring forth. We've got a killer at large in the village. God knows where he's going to strike next. And what have we got? Nothing.
Oh, Leo, come on. It's not as bad as all that. Kingston's put me on to Peters' solicitors.
Peters. We've got 2 Peters. We don't know which is which.
The first Peters, the one who died in Kingston's nursing home. Apparently, he was insured with mutual ordered life endowment for £20,000.
Yeah, so it all went to Harris?
Yes.
Yeah, thanks. Interesting. But what does it mean? Look, Campion, I've known you since you were a child. And I know when there's something on your mind. If you know anything, you must tell me. I think I could bear anything rather than this uncertainty.
Oh, Leo. I'm not sure.
Well, it doesn't matter. I must know.
I know how the first murder was done, and I think I know who did it, but I'm not sure. At this stage, proof is impossible. Give me another day or two.
Well, I'd rather you told me now.
We can't do anything without evidence. 48 hours.
Very well.
There is something, though. Can you get a Home Office order for the exhumation of R.I. Peters, buried over at Tethering last January?
Well, I could try. But, my dear fellow, identification after all this time.
I've got an idea about that.
And it's important?
I don't know. I think so.
Well, I'll see what I can do.
Can I use the phone?
Yes, of course. Anyone interested?
Dr. Kingston.
Been making a bit of a nuisance of himself lately. A bit too much like a schoolboy.
He should enjoy this, then. I'm going to ask him to show me round his graveyard.
No, really. I'm glad of something different to do. It's been a quiet day. You said you were interested in the soil.
That's right.
Well, yes. I think there might be some kind of preservative. About a year ago, a grave digger dragged me out to see a most odd thing. He opened up a grave to put in a relation of the dead woman, and the coffin lid had come off. She'd been in the ground for 3 years, but the body was almost perfect. How did you guess?
Cow parsley. You often find it growing in soil like that.
Oh. Wait a minute. You're not thinking of an exhumation, are you?
Perhaps.
I say, it'll be rather jolly. Exciting. I've never been present at an exhumation.
Nothing fixed, so you'd better keep quiet about it. Gossip could be fatal.
A question of identification, I suppose. What a stroke of luck he was buried here. In 99 cemeteries out of 100.
Yes, but do keep quiet about it, for heaven's sake.
Oh, yes, of course. Besides, I don't see a soul to talk to.
The following day, the third since Hey Ho had been found, I woke up with a sensation of apprehension, a premonition that things were going to move, although if I'd known in what direction, I don't think I'd have got out of bed. It began with Professor Farrington's report. He came over to make it verbally while I was at the station with Pusey.
It was chloral hydrate.
So he was poisoned.
Well, it's difficult to decide how much the man had taken before his death. There's no way of knowing, you see, whether when the stone crashed down on his head, he was already dead, or just drugged. Mm.
What would the chloral hydrate have done exactly?
Made him sleepy. If you came on a man suffering from a small dose of the poison, you'd think he was in a deep, natural sleep.
Mm. What about Hey Ho?
Oh, there's no funny business there. Very brutal. One quick thrust.
Yes.
It was an interesting wound. Remarkably lucky or delivered by someone who was no fool. Caught him just over the collarbone and went straight down into the neck. He died at once.
And the knife?
I can draw it for you. Oh. Or at least the blade. Long and thin, you see. Like this.
I left them together and went off to find Whippet. Neither he nor Effie Rowlandson were at the Feathers when I arrived, but presently he came up alone in his baby Austin.
I've been house hunting. There's a little villa down the road that interests me. I like empty houses, don't you? Whenever I'm in a district, I look at empty houses. We must look together sometime.
Yes, well, I really haven't got time at the moment. Look, I wanted to ask you, did you ever talk to Hey Ho?
Oh, yes. Yes, I had several conversations with him. Not a nice fellow. Tried to borrow money.
Very likely. What else did you talk about?
Natural history, I think, mostly. Flora and fauna, you know.
Some are born blind, some achieve blindness, some have blindness thrust upon them. Moles come into the first category, don't they?
I went back to Highwaters. There, the thing I had not foreseen, the thing for which I shall never forgive myself, awaited me. Lug had gone. There may be men servants who go off without a moment's notice, but Lug's not one of them. We searched and searched, but there was no sign of him. He disappeared as mysteriously as Hey Ho had done, wandered into the fields and vanished in precisely the same way. I didn't know what to do. In the end, I rang Kingston.
Glad you called me. I came over right away. There's obviously no time to lose.
So what's your idea?
That chap Whippet. I've been keeping an eye on him. Oh, I know, old school friend and all that, but you don't really know him, do you? And someone must be behind all this.
Well, go on.
There's a house, an empty villa all by itself at the end of a partly made-up road. Whippet's been down there once or twice, poking around. I think he actually got the key from the agents. Didn't it occur to you that Hey Ho probably wasn't killed in that open field? It's a lonely little place, just right for a spot of bother. I think we should take a look.
Well, I suppose anything's better than hanging around here. All right, come on.
We'd better take your car, it's faster.
Straight down the hill, then left. Look out!
It's all right.
Pull over.
No time.
You haven't been sleeping. Pull in there. I've got a hip flask in my bag. Pull in or I won't be responsible. Here, have a drop of this.
You're right. That is better. I think I'll have another. Just what I needed. Can I hang on to the flask for a while?
Of course.
Dear me.
Are you all right?
Yes. I think so.
What's the matter? Feeling tired?
Brandy, I haven't eaten for some time.
Perhaps I'd better drive.
Thanks. Got to get out of luck. I'm tired, terribly tired.
I was aware of him pulling up, and through my half-closed eyes I saw a dilapidated little villa, its white stucco streaked with many rains. At the side of the house there was a garage with a badly made drive leading up to it. I was aware of Kingston unlocking the door of the garage, and then I was down at the bottom of the car, my eyes closed and my breath coming at regular intervals.
Well, there you are, my dear Mr. Campion. Sleep sound. There. Let me wipe the wheel. Press your hands onto it. Carbon monoxide, easy death. That's why suicides choose it so often. So simple.
I just leave you in the car, start the engine, and close the doors. The neurotic Mr. Campion has done the inexplicable once again. Suicide of distinguished London criminologist. I was too clever for you. Too damned clever.
By half.
That business with the hip flask was poor stuff. I smelled the chloral as I raised it to my lips. I simply didn't drink. But I hadn't realized the fellow's strength. When we came to grips, there was muscle there and weight to back it up. Besides, he was demented. He fought like a fiend. I no longer had any doubts about the identity of the hand that put the knife into Hayhoe's neck. His great shoulders hunched against the light. He leapt on me and we fell to the ground. I nearly escaped him once. I'd nearly reached the doors when something like a vice seized me round the throat. I was lifted bodily and my head crashed down onto the concrete floor. It was like going down very suddenly in a lift. It went on, and at the end there was darkness. I came up slowly in little jerks. I was aware that my arms were moving up and down in a slow rhythmic movement I couldn't control, and then I was gasping, fighting for breath.
Look out, you're doing nicely now. Don't get excited. Steady yourself.
The voice came to me like a dream, and I saw through the fog a ridiculous small boy with ink smeared all over his face looking down at my bed in the sicker. Then the ink disappeared, but I still saw the same face.
Take it easy.
Whippet! What are you...
Take it easy.
Lark! For God's sake, we've got to get Lark!
I know. Here, let me help you up. Oh, positively dangerous, isn't he? I let Kingston get away before I got you out. I didn't want two of you on my hands. He took your car.
Come on. We've got to get to him before it's too late.
A fellow came by on a bicycle a moment ago. I've sent him off to tell the others. He's going to send the whole crowd up to the nursing home. I thought that was best. I've got my car in the meadow around the back. Let's go to Tethering straight away, shall we?
How do you feel now?
Rough. Now, I've got a terrible vision of luck hoist up on a scarecrow stake as high as Nelson's column. Doesn't this thing go any faster?
It's like a barracks. Where do we begin?
Upstairs, quick.
Five doors on the landing were open, so we concentrated on the one that wasn't. It was unlocked, but someone held it on the other side. We could hear him snarling and panting as he fought with it.
Now, wait, be careful.
Through the open door, I could see a bed, and on it was a large, familiar form. The face was uncovered, and as far as I could see, the colour was natural. But as I stared at it, I saw the thing that sent the blood racing to my face and turned my body cold.
Lark! His hair! It's been dyed red.
What colour was Peter's?
And so I saw the truth. The body of one fat man is much like the body of another when the hair is dyed and the features obliterated. Kingston was going to have a body for his exhumation after all.
Campion!
It's all right, Whippet. You can come in now.
Oh.
I think I heard Lear's car pull up outside.
It took three policemen to get Kingston into the car, and when he came up before the magistrate, there was an unprecedented scene in court. At the assizes, the counsel pleaded insanity, a defence which failed, and I think justifiably. But that was later. My own concern at the time was Lug. For a long time, it was touch and go. It was chloral hydrate again. Kingston didn't want any wound showing on his exhibition corpse. What the finishing process was going to be, I can only guess. I don't like to think of it even now. Lug told us his story as soon as we got him round. It was elementary.
He just rang me up. Suppose he made sure you was out first.
What did he say?
Give me a message. It was supposed to be from you. Work in town or something. Said you wanted to see me at his place first.
And he picked you up?
That's right.
Well, that's why no one saw a car. If it was Kingston's car, no one would notice. It's too well known.
Well, anyway, he drove me to his place and he told me to wait for a while. Got me a beer. I thought he was a real gentleman.
And you drank it?
Well, of course I drank it. How was I to know you was leading this bloke up the garden with you come and hold me hand every 5 minutes? You stuffed him full of this exhumation, thinking he'd go for you, I suppose. Never thought of me. Isn't that you all over?
Let's be thankful you're alive to tell the tale.
Oh, I am. But what about this orange barnet? I've got to shave me head now. What me London friend's going to say? Holiday in the country? Oh, yes, very likely. Little place called Wormwood, was it? Or maybe Dartmoor or Brixton.
During the next 24 hours, we worked incessantly, and at the end of it, the case against Kingston was complete. It was on the evening of the day on which the exhumation had taken place that Leo, Janet, and I went down to Halt Knights. Leo was still seething.
Bricks! Yellow bricks wrapped in a blanket and nailed in a coffin. Even now, I don't see how he did it alone.
He wasn't alone. He had Peters to help him.
You're terribly confusing. How many brothers were there?
None. Only the one inimitable pig.
But why go to all that trouble of pretending he died in January?
Insurance. £20,000, my poppet. He and Kingston were going to do a deal. Tie up with a medical man and let mutual ordered life endowments solve your money problems. Pig invented the brother and they killed him off together.
Yellow bricks.
Neat.
Very.
So why didn't it work?
Because Pig was a crook, basically. He wouldn't pay up. Once the deed had been done, Pig had Kingston by the short and curlies. I think he kept his doctor pal on a string, promising, and then laughing at him. He didn't reckon with the sort of man he was dealing with.
Mad?
Well, not quite.
And what about Hayhoe?
Wicked uncle finds wicked nephew in clover and wants to browse too. Another danger for Kingston.
Yeah, I think we had him to dinner. Terrible fella. Hayhoe blackmailed him, I suppose, after guessing the truth, huh?
Hayhoe was certainly selling discretion, but I don't think he even guessed Kingston killed Pig. He made an appointment with Kingston to talk it over, and they chose the empty house. Kingston killed him there, and later on carried him to the cornfield where we found him.
Oh, he deceived us all very well. I never dreamed.
Utterly deceived. Seemed a decent enough fellow.
Yes, he was amazing. My arrival must have shaken him up, but he trotted out that brother story immediately and made it sound convincing. The only mistake he made was in dumping the body in the river when I said I was going to examine it. He acted on impulse. He saw his way and went straight for it every time.
You ought not to have walked into that last trap he set for you.
I had to. We had no proof. He'd have got clean away with the first two efforts. All the same, I don't think I'd have been so foolhardy if it hadn't been for Lug.
All the same, you'd have looked pretty green if it hadn't been for Gilbert.
Gilbert?
Whippet.
Oh, yeah.
We had a word or two on the phone before Kingston picked me up. We guessed that if Kingston was going to try anything, he'd take me to that empty house. But still, I shouldn't have been so brave without him.
Then you know about Gilbert.
How much do you know?
A little.
Tell me. Leo was on the point of demanding an explanation when we pulled up at the Knights. We found Poppy, Pusey and Whippet waiting for us in the lounge, and when we were all sitting round with the ice cubes clinking in our tall glasses, Poppy suddenly turned on me.
You've made a mistake, Albert. I don't want to be unkind, dear, and I do think you're very clever. But how could Dr. Kingston have killed Harris or Peters or whatever his name was when he was in this room playing poker with Leo?
Yes, yes, that's right, quite forgot. Just cashing in his queen pot when, bang, down came the urn.
You said yourself it couldn't have been an accident.
It had occurred to me, sir, too. I was going to mention it.
Well, I think the time has come for me to do my parlour trick.
What?
Poppy, when Dr. Kingston called that morning, you gave him a drink, didn't you?
Of course.
What was it?
Oh, scotch on the rocks, highball, something like that.
With ice?
Oh, yes. It was a blazing day.
And do you know where he was all morning?
Well, no, not really.
Did he go upstairs?
Yes. He went to have a look at one of the girls. She had a touch of flu.
Was he up there long?
Well, yes, he was. Quite a while, now I come to think of it. But I don't see. This was a long time before that vase fell on, you know, Harris.
While he was upstairs, Kingston went in to see Harris, alias Pig. Pig had a shocking hangover, and he asked Kingston for something for it. Kingston had some chloral in his bag. It's a reputable narcotic used in small quantities. He gave Pig a tidy dose, and Pig staggered out and settled down in the deck chair.
Yeah, but even so,
wait a minute. Kingston was just going to let Pig die of the chloral, but that was risky. He noticed the position of the deck chair and the vase right above it. He sipped his drink, and he saw his chance.
But, my dear fellow, I keep telling you, he was with me.
It was the drink that did it. He had two or three solid cubes of ice in his glass. He slipped upstairs. The rest was easy. He took the urn out of the socket that kept it in place and balanced it on its peg, half over the ledge.
He propped it up on the ice cubes and went down and played poker.
Good God.
Amazing.
Oh, there was a risk that someone would notice, but, well, it was small. No one did. He just had to wait.
Until the ice melted and the urn fell. Oh, it's horrible.
Powerful smart. If I might ask you, sir, how did you come to think of that?
The moss on the ledge was damp when I first arrived. It didn't dawn on me at first, but when I had a drink here the other day and I saw the ice, it just slotted into place.
Wonderful. I was after the same fellow, of course, but the alibi put me out.
Whippet, very pleased to have you here, of course, but where do you fit into this extraordinary story? I mean, what are you doing here?
Well,
His little hands are sore and his snout bleedeth.
Eh?
This is Gilbert Whippet, Jr., son of Q. Gilbert Whippet, chairman of the Mutual Ordered Life Endowment Company, sometimes called the M-O-L-E.
Mole.
Oh.
You always were a lazy little beast, Whippet.
I prefer writing to action. Well, I'm sorry to have dragged you into all this, but we had nothing to go on, except a sort of uneasy suspicion. I couldn't approach you direct because, well, there was nothing direct about it.
Lug and I appreciated your style.
Well, it seemed the best way to ensure your interest. Whenever I thought you might be flagging, I wrote again. And you just followed the mole.
When Lug and I set off for London the next day, Poppy, who had come to High Waters for lunch, stood with Leo and waved goodbye to us from the lawn. The sky was dappled blue and white, the birds sang, and the air smelled of hay. Janet, with Whippet in tow, came running out to us just before we started off. Her eyes were dancing, and she looked adorable.
Congratulate us, Albert. We're engaged. Isn't it wonderful?
What? Yes. Congratulations. I hope you'll be very happy.
I'm indebted to you, Campion.
We drove for some time in silence. I was thoughtful, and Lug, who was as bald as an egg, seemed depressed. As we reached the main road, he nudged me.
Cool! What a performance!
Whose?
That bloke Whippet. Come down to a place with Miss Effie Rowlandson. And go off with Miss Jenny Persweaven. That took a bit of doing.
Lug, how would you like to walk home?
The Case of the Late Pig by Marjorie Allingham was dramatised for radio by Gregory Evans. The cast, Albert Campion, James Snell. Lug, Cyril Shapps. Whippet, Hayden Wood. Janet, Diana Bishop. Leo, Garrard Green. Kingston, David McAllister. Poppy, Judy Franklin. Effie, Amanda Murray. Inspector Pusey, Christopher Scott. Hayhoe, Philip Menicom. Parson and Pepper, Michael Drew. Farringdon, Paul Nicholson, and the police constable, Nicholas Orchard. The programme was directed in Bristol by Brian Miller. Now there's a bit of time in hand before 10 o'clock, the weather forecast and the news. So let's have a look at the remainder of some of our programmes this evening. Offering a drink is a traditional sign of hospitality and welcome, and yet it's thought that 750,000 people in Britain have a serious drinking problem. Treatment for that problem can vary widely. Some drinkers, for example, want to abstain completely, while others prefer to learn to drink at a safer level. Tonight, at 10:15, Peter Evans considers some of the treatments available, as well as the reasons for their wide variation of aims, in Breaking the Bottle. Loneliness, like alcoholism, is on the increase, paradoxically when, in this age of communication, it's becoming increasingly difficult to be alone. Later this evening, in A Word in Edgeways, loneliness is the subject for discussion. Here's Brian Redhead.
There used to be a particularly soppy song which asked the question, "Are you lonely tonight?" It was really a come-on for the last waltz, but it is a real question. Loneliness, or so they say, is a growing malady. And tonight, on A Word in Edgeways, I want to ask David Benedictus, Jean McFarlane, and Frank Wright if they believe that loneliness is widespread, and if so, why? What is this unwanted solitude? Well, that's A Word in Edgeways tonight at 11:15.
And that's followed by another episode of Ray Gosling's On the Train to New Zealand. And speaking of trains, now from our motoring and travel unit, here's some motoring information. With temperatures dropping rapidly, driving conditions are becoming treacherous in most areas tonight. In South Wales, there's no improvement so far, as the roads are concerned. All roads are virtually impassable, including the M4 motorway and the A48, the main London to Fishguard road. A similar situation applies in the Gwent area, where the roads are blocked by deep snow. Drivers heading for the West Country will find the M4 motorway closed in both directions from Junction 17 near Chippenham in Wiltshire to Newport in Gwent, and that includes the Severn Bridge. It's expected that the M4 will remain closed all day tomorrow. Drivers making for Devon and Cornwall will find the A303 and A30 passable with care to Exeter, but after that, the A30 is blocked to Bodmin. The alternative route is the A38 via Plymouth, although conditions are bad, with the road reduced to single alternative lanes in places. Drivers using the A40 to enter Wales will also find conditions hard going, and police don't advise travelling into that part of the country at all. In Wiltshire, the A4 is closed between Marlborough and Cairn, and all roads north to south are closed over Salisbury Plain. The M50 motorway is closed in Herefordshire, and the M5 is only passable with care. Well, that's our motoring information, and now here's a quick look at the weather forecast. Most districts will have bright periods, although patches of freezing fog may persist in a few areas. There'll be scattered snow showers, mainly over eastern and northern Scotland. Southwest England will have outbreaks of snow, possibly giving heavy falls in places, although rain is likely at times in the extreme southwest. The snow may extend to the extreme south of Wales and some other southern coastal counties of England for a time. It will continue very cold and frosty. And the outlook for Monday and Tuesday, continuing very cold with severe overnight frost. There'll be sunny intervals, but also snow in places and patches of freezing fog. That's the forecast.